Hey, friend, welcome back here to the Semi-Seminary. And here we are another week in another episode of our Bible study series that we lovingly but thoughtfully call The Bible for Grownups. This week, we begin a whole new series in which, for the next 4 weeks, we're going to be looking at Paul's letter to the Philippian church. Tonight is just an overview, but it really gives us something to contemplate, this idea of how everything in our life can change if we simply change our perspective. I'll see you on the other side. So tonight, what we're going to do is we're going to start a four-part series. What we're going to do with these next 4 weeks, starting with tonight, is we're actually going to, rather than just look at one story or look at stories across the Bible, over the next 4 weeks, what I'd like to do is look at this letter that Paul wrote to the Philippian church as a whole. We'll look at the book. We're not going to go line by line or anything like that. But what we are going to do is take four stories from four chapters of this letter, and that's going to be our kind of snapshot of Philippians. So we're not going to get too deep here, but we are going to explore this letter of Philippians, figuring out exactly what it means for us, what it means for the people that were that received the letter. And tonight, I love the introduction of multiple part nights because I don't have to worry about getting too deep in the woods. Tonight is just the 30,000 foot overview of what's going on with regard to this letter that we know in the New Testament as the book of Philippians. So, as I want to do, I want to give you a little bit of context about the books because, again, the context will give us a different perspective. And I want you to hang on to that word, perspective, because I want you to see how powerful our perspective can be in the way that we live our life based on the way we see our life. And I think if we look at a difference of perspective, it also helps bringing this book of Philippians to life. So the book of Philippians, again, written by the Apostle Paul to the church in a place, a geographic place in the ancient world called Philippi. Now, Paul actually started this church in Philippi. He was an apostle. We hear that kind of word thrown around very often, but often we don't even know, what does that mean, apostle? I hear that word, but I don't, what does it mean? It means people who have received some sort of spiritual commission seen by other believers as having that commission, and they're sent on missions to start other churches, to preach the gospel of Jesus, to take the word and truth of Christ to places where it maybe, in this instance, had never been brought before, okay? That's what the job title, that's what the job is for the job title apostle. He's sent out by God to lead people to Christ. And he'd raise up leaders. He'd start churches in all different kinds of cities. And this was actually a church he started around the year 52. Okay, remember Jesus, the years debated 30, 33, somewhere in there for his death. Okay, so in our heads, death of Jesus, crucifixion, 30, 33. This is 52. About 20 years after the death and resurrection of Jesus, Paul assembled this church in Philippi, and Paul loved the Philippians dearly. And we're going to see, actually, this very deep affection that the Apostle Paul has for the people in the church in Philippi. So he starts the church in about 52. The time he's writing this letter, Philippians, is about 62. So about 10 years after he had started the church in Philippi, he's writing a letter back to them. Now at the time, and Paul is writing in response to something that the church had done for him. Because at the time, Paul was actually in a significant amount of need, and people took up a generous love offering, a financial gift. And they sent it to him. Now, normally, Paul would reject these kinds of gifts. He was a very proud person and would always say, hey, my ministry is never to be a burden on you. I've always worked right? And I've never imposed upon you for a financial gift. Paul is trying to make it very clear. I am not doing what I'm doing for financial gain, even if it means you just helping me put food on the table and a place to put my head at night. This is not why I'm doing it. But because of this special relationship that he had for this church in Philippi, Paul received their gift. And he was blown away by its generosity. And he writes this very heartfelt, very emotional thank you letter. That's what Philippians is to begin with. It's also, this thank you letter is also mingled in with gentle and loving instruction, okay? Paul's not going to leave out some things that he sees as concerns for the church in Philippi and ways that they might address those concerns. And those are going to be the things we're going to look at in the coming weeks, not tonight, but in the coming weeks. He's doing this also, again, not to beat them over the head with a stick, but to do it because he loves them. And one, I think, unmistakable theme that we're going to see throughout the sections that we look at when we look at the book of Philippi is that there is an overarching theme of joy. In fact, we're going to see the word joy or rejoice at least 19 different times in the book of Philippi. And we're going to see this massive joy coming out of a guy whom we're going to find out did not have very many good natural or earthly reasons to be joyful. Now, I want to give you a piece of information. You may not know this about the book of Philippi, but again, knowing this bit of truth might change your perspective on what's happening in the letter. I love finding out things when something really changes my perspective. Right? I don't know if you've ever maybe met somebody and you thought, man, I don't really care for that person. They're kind of snobbish, or they're kind of rude, or we might say they're stuck up, right? We've probably all met somebody we felt that way about. But when you actually get to know and you find out more about their situation, maybe you find out what they've been going through in their personal private life, and you're like, whoa, I had no idea, right? And then, you know, maybe you start to have a heart for them because you have a better understanding of what they've been going through. Because of this new piece of information, it's changed your perspective. There's that word again. And it could be that you're having a bad day. Maybe you're running late. You're stuck in traffic. Your car overheats. Whatever. And you're thinking, oh, why is my life such a mess? Right? At least in that moment. And then maybe you get news about somebody who's dealing with a sincere tragedy. And all of a sudden, you start to think differently. Wow, I didn't realize. And that changes my perspective. What I want to do this evening is to give you a little piece of information, again, that might change your perspective. Remember, we're looking at joy, the theme of joy in the book of Philippi. It might change your perspective when we read this book. Because if you didn't know, when the Apostle Paul wrote this joy-filled letter, a letter of thank you, a letter of appreciation, he was actually writing it from a Roman prison. We find in Acts 28, chapter 28 shows us that he actually spent 2 years. Okay, imagine 2 years under house arrest simply for preaching the gospel of Jesus Christ. Now, if you can imagine, 2 years, he's chained up. Now, when I say chained up, I literally mean Paul was chained 24 hours a day. There would be four guards that would rotate every 6 hours and would actually be chained to Paul as a prisoner. Now, one thing you might also not know about Paul is that Paul's greatest desire, his greatest dream, pardon me, was to be able to take the gospel message to the city of Rome. That was what Paul wanted to do more than anything. So here he is in Rome, but not in the role of preacher, rather in the role of prisoner. And we're going to watch with a change of perspective. Even in the middle of another significant trial, we're going to watch as God can give us joy no matter what. So let's dive in. We're going to start verse 2, chapter 1, beginning of Philippians. I'm praying that God would give us all a different perspective. Paul writes this to his beloved church in Philippi. He says, "Grace and peace to you from God our Father and the Lord Jesus Christ." Now listen to this emotion. He says, "I thank my God every time I remember you." Every time I think about you, I thank God. "In all of my prayers for all of you, I always pray," and here's where the first time we see this, this word, "I always pray with joy because of your partnership in the gospel from the first day until now, being confident." Now, this, watch him encourage these friends in Philippi. Being confident of this, that he who began a good work in you, Church of Philippi, will carry it on to completion until the day of Christ Jesus, until the day Christ comes back. Verse 7, he says, "It's right for me to feel this way about you, since I have you in my heart. For whether I am," and here's where he gives us a little bit of hint about his current situation, "for whether I am in chains, if I am a prisoner, or defending, or confirming the gospel, all of you share in God's grace with me." Here he is saying, even if I am a prisoner, even if they have me locked up, even if I am chains, he knows the Philippians are going to be very, very concerned about him. The church in Philippi have sent him this money. They know the situation that their beloved Paul is in prison. And one of the things he is doing here in Philippians is kind of writing to the church and saying, "Look, I just want to let you guys know what I'm going through, and to not freak out about it." Okay? Now, I probably would freak out about it if I was in prison not knowing whether I was going to live or die. Right? Because I'm not Paul. Paul, not freaking out. Now, if there's anything that Paul wanted to change, chances are, well, he wouldn't have wanted to be a prisoner, but he would have also wanted to be free to preach the gospel. Now, I want to ask you all a question. I want you to think about this, and I want you to be honest with yourself. How many of us, we have something in our life that we just wish were different? Right now, there's something that, man, I just wish, whatever it might be, that God might just change this thing about my life. I wish something was different. Chances are, most every single one of us at every season of our lives can look at our lives and say, you know what? I wish this or that wasn't the way that it was. Seems like whenever you're younger, you always want to be older. Whenever you're older, you always want to be younger. Sometimes you think, I wish I wasn't doing the kind of work I'm doing. I'm in a job that's beneath me. It's not fulfilling. I'm not crazy about the people I work with. In fact, they drive me crazy. And we look at our lives and we think, you know what? I just wish that there was something in my life that was different. Here are three thoughts about this. And I'd like for you to write this on your heart. We all have a what, but we don't understand the why. Now, that sounds catchy and clever. It'd be a little bit tricky, so let me just kind of go over it slowly. There is a what. We all have a what. This is what's going on in my life, and I don't understand why that it's not different. Okay? I have a what in my life that I don't understand the why. God, why don't you do something about this what in my life? Okay? At different seasons, all of us have a what. We don't understand the why. But I hope that this can be encouraging to us, because I think when we understand our next thought, we're going to find that God always has a why behind the what. I love that. God always has a why. God always has a why. God does not waste a hurt. God's ways are higher than our ways. God's thoughts are higher than our thoughts. God is through and through. God's in control. God can take what the enemy intended in our lives to be for evil, and our God is so good, he can turn an attack into something that's good. He can make a trial, right, into something that maybe develops character in us, so that he can build our faith over time to go through difficult times. God is working in all things to bring about good. God has a why in the what that often we don't understand. Another thought, the kind of third thought, is this. I don't have to understand the why to trust God with the what. I don't have to understand the why to simply trust God with the what, because I can trust in the Lord with all of my heart and lean not on my own understanding, but in all of my ways. Acknowledge him, and he'll make my paths straight. I don't have to understand everything to continue to trust God. And if you're in a place right now in your own life where there is something and you're going, I don't like it. I wish this was different. I'm not sure what to do about this. Your life is hard. I'd like for you tonight to think of, when you think about the things that are hard in your life, if you change our perspective, to ask yourself two questions about the hard things in your life. What do we do? What kinds of questions can we ask when life gets hard? The first question that we're going to be tempted to ask is why? Right? And I want to encourage you to bounce over the why question. Instead of asking why, I want to encourage you to ask what. In other words, the title of our story tonight, when something bad or difficult or hard happens in your life, I don't want you to say, ask why. I want you to ask God, now what? Now what? This is our first question we're going to ask. I don't like what's going on in my life, God, but now what? I don't understand this, God, but I trust you with the why. What is it that you want me to do? And we see this concept coming alive here in verse 12. Paul says to his friends in Philippi, now I want you to know, brothers and sisters, that what's happened to me, okay, pause, what has happened to you? Not necessarily, stop. Think for you, not about Paul, for you and the hard times in your life. Pause for a moment. Let me ask you, what has happened to you? Not necessarily what did you do. We sometimes stop with just the things we... What has happened? Maybe you lost a job. Maybe you woke up and you just found yourself in a horrible place financially. Maybe you got a bad report from the doctor. Maybe you've got a relationship that is very important in your life that is massively messed up right now. Right? Maybe you've hit whatever type of dead end and something feels really, really bad. Something has happened to you that you didn't plan. Same here with Paul. Paul says, now I want you to know, brothers and sisters, that what's happened to me, it looks really bad, he says. But it's really served to, Paul says, it's really served to advance the gospel. The word that's translated there in this letter, advanced, is a military term in the Greek, and it means to, in its most basic sense, it means to move forward. Described when a group of troops are on the battlefield and they're actually moving forward and taking territory. When it gets into its most literal sense, this word advance here actually refers to the group of people that would go out ahead of the army and clear any obstacles or underbrush away so that the army could advance more easily. That's this word, advance. Okay? All of these bad things that I could see right now going into my life, yes, they're bad, but look, even though it's bad, it is designed, it is to serve to advance the gospel. A lot of times you might be in a place, a bad place in your life, and you're going, this isn't good. And I don't see God working here. I don't. I don't feel his presence. I don't understand. There is nothing good that can come out of this. We can feel that way. Even those of us that think our faith is pretty good. I want to encourage you to stop and change your perspective and realize that the God that we serve is big enough and even specializes in working through things that we do not understand. It's one of God's trademarks. We serve a God who can take obstacles and turn them into divine opportunities. We serve a God that could take what we call setbacks and turn them into set-ups. Not so that we might win the lottery or that we might receive some sort of earthly blessing. No, for God to be glorified, for our lives to be used to make a difference to God. That's the ultimate prize here, right? You might feel like you're in prison. Oh my gosh, I'm chained up to this thing and I don't like it and I'm in prison. But friends, your prison can turn into your pulpit. In other words, there could be a purpose in your prison. What the enemy designed for evil, God can actually use for good in the middle of the thing, right, that you would never choose to actually happen to you. God specializes in using those things to bring about God's glory. Your prison can become your pulpit. There's a purpose in your prison. You may not see it, but if you let God, God can give you a different perspective. There are times when we are in our lives where we don't see it and we don't understand it. We don't like it. Even though you can't necessarily see it, I want to encourage and remind you that God is there. Right? If you'll look through your circumstances with kind of that weird way, like you got to look like with a crazy eye to get the 3D picture to pop out, if you'll change your perspective, you can actually see, right? In the middle of your prison, if you look with your spiritual eyes, your opportunity to bring glory for God. What do you want God to do through this for me? What now? Now what? What do you want to show me? What do you want to do in me? What do you want to do through me? Now what? Now what do you want me to do? Verse 13, we see the story come to life. Verse 13, he says, as a result, it has become clear throughout the whole palace guard and to everyone else that I am in chains for Christ. Now, wait a minute. You might be reading that and say, no, you're in chains because you're preaching about Christ. We're punishing you, Paul. Paul, this isn't a good thing. What are you so happy about? You need to be quiet. Paul, we're punishing you for saying stuff like this. And you know what he could have said? He could have said, you think I'm chained down, but I can't preach Christ? But you've forgotten who I'm chained to. Paul might say, it's not written, Paul might say, you see, my heart has always been to reach Rome And what you've done is you've chained me to four different Roman guards a day, right? Because again, every 6 hours, a new Roman guard would come in. And all of a sudden, you've chained me to the leaders who have tremendous influence. The guards are members of the Imperial Guard. They're influential Romans. And guess what you've done through my punishment? You've given me a captive audience with some of the most powerful people in Rome. And suddenly, you start to scratch your head and go, who's in prison now? Perspective. When I was younger, I loved to wrestle. I loved it. In fact, to this day, I still love wrestling. I wish there was some kind of old fat guy wrestling club you could go to and still wrestle, you know? I mean, they've got golf courses for us, right? Why not old fat guy wrestling clubs? Anyway, I'm sure you couldn't tell by looking, but whenever I did wrestle, I wrestled at heavyweight. Now, what's great about wrestling heavyweight is you never have to cut weight. I mean, I remember getting on the bus to go to a tournament, right? And all my buddies would be there like wearing trash bags and spitting into trash cans and stuff, right? And I'd get on the bus with a bag of chocolate donuts and a large chocolate milk, right? That's not true. I think I was a pretty good teammate when it came to stuff like that. I just thought the mental image of that would be funny. In case you've ever seen guys trying to cut weight and wearing rubber suits and spitting in trash cans. Anyway, the only way in fact, for heavyweights is that you can't weigh too much. And so I never had to cut weight. But the problem was that whenever I was wrestling, that also meant that I might be wrestling guys that were 30 to 40 pounds heavier than I was. So when I began to have any success at wrestling, I realized I could use that weight and that force and their strength actually against them. And so I got to learn and use this move a lot called a hip toss, right? A hip toss. So like when one of these big fellows would come charging in, right? I could just shift my stance to the right a little bit, changing my perspective. See what I did there? Right, just a little bit to the side creates an angle, and then I could catch them, right? And whenever you get all of that weight and all of that force going in that direction, there's no stopping it. The whole driving force of that art is to use someone else's strength and use the force of their attack against them. And when your spiritual enemy attacks you, and throws all of his weight at you by the power of God, right? What is meant for evil, you can flip it straight to its back and 6 points for the pin, right? Some of us right now, we're going through very difficult things. I want you to know that your test that you endure today could be your testimony tomorrow. The test that you're going through today might be your testimony tomorrow, right? Your misery could be your ministry. I never thought I'd end up here, whatever, but oh God, the way God worked through this is life-changing for me. Verse 14, because of my chains, he says, hey, I'm locked up. Most of the brothers in the Lord have been encouraged to speak the word of God more courageously and fearlessly. Guys, can't you see? God is all through this thing, right? So if you wake up and you're not married and you want to be married, now what? You wake up one day, you see you're financially strapped like you never thought you'd be. Okay, God, I'm going to trust you with the why. Now what? What do you want me to do? How do you want to show yourself through me? You hit a relational dead end. You hit a dead end in your career. Okay, now what, God? I still trust you with everything in me. Now what, God? What do you want to do through me with this? And the second question that we want to ask when things get hard is, so what? Now, there was some division in the church in Philippi. Paul wanted to address this. Again, we're going to talk more about the concerns Paul had in future nights with Philippians. In verse 15, he talks about the sum of it. He says, it's true. Some preach Christ out of envy and rivalry, but others out of goodwill. He said, the latter does so in love, knowing that I'm put here for the defense of the gospel, but the former, they preach Christ out of selfish ambition, not sincerely, supposing that somehow or another they could stir up trouble for me whilst I'm in chains. And then in verse 18, he asks the question. He says, but what does it matter? The most important thing in every way, whether from false motives or true, is that Christ is preached. That's the most important thing. That's the most important thing to Paul. What is this other stuff, the squabbling and bickering amongst members in the community? What do these little petty arguments have to do with anything? Right? We could get riled up. We could go on and on about it. We could blog about it. We could post on Facebook about it. We could gossip about it. We could write letters of complaint about it. We could have our own personal pity parties about it. But he says, what does it even matter? What's most important is that Christ is preached. Sometimes when you get a place in life where there are some things that are just bothering, you have to learn to say, so what? What does it matter? In fact, sorry, the Greek, so what, the way these words are translated is tiskar plain. Now, when you say plain, you have to say it like tattoo, right? Years ago from Fantasy Island, the plain. It's exactly the same way. Tiskar plain, right? What does it matter? Tiskar plain. And what I've trained myself to do, although in complete candor, I'm not always successful at it, but I do try to do it. When something irritates me, when something bothers me, ask yourself, what is this going to matter in 100 years? 100 years from now, what does this even matter? Right? If it's not a big deal 100 years from now, it's not a big deal today. In fact, it's not going to be a big deal a year from now, a month from now. For a lot of our petty squabbles, it won't matter next week. So when we ask this question, what it does is it helps us to focus not so much on what's not important, but it frees us to focus on what is important. So you're watching your favorite show on TV and the president interrupts with a speech. Tiskar plain, right? You're running late and the train slows you down. What's it going to matter 100 years from now? Tiskar plain. You spill something on your favorite outfit? Tiskar plain. When you identify so many of these circumstances in our lives aren't really big deals, it changes your perspective. Suddenly you can focus on what really does matter, because so often we get wrapped up in things that are not eternal. Tiskar plain. What's it matter? Who really cares? It's not that big a deal. Because when you begin to train yourself to recognize what doesn't matter, it then allows you to learn to focus on what does matter. So, what does matter? What does matter? Well, God matters a lot. Eternity matters a lot. Serving people matters. Using our gifts to make a difference in this world matters. And that change of perspective actually can free us totally and completely, even when we feel like we're chained up. That's why Paul could say one of the most stunning statements that any person has ever made in the history of the world from chains is verse 21. He says, for me to live is Christ. In other words, hey, if I continue living, I continue representing Christ. I am dead myself because I live for him. My life is not my own. It is all about Christ's. For me to live is Christ and to die is gain. In this Roman prison, when Paul was writing this joy-filled letter, he was awaiting a trial to determine whether or not he would live or they were going to execute him. He was essentially This is a little dramatic, but essentially he's locked up on death row. What could become death row? Maybe. For me to live is Christ. To die means to be in his presence. So tisk our plane. What does it matter? When you have that perspective, all the things that tend to weigh us down, they don't even really seem to matter that much anymore. We all have a what, but we don't understand the why. The good news, friends, is that God always has a why behind the what. And we don't have to understand the why to trust God in the what. So we've got something we don't understand why. We're going to ask, now what, God? God, what do you want to do through me? What do you want this to do in me? What do you want to show me in this? What do you want me to do going through this attack that I might bring glory to you? Right? Something else? Tiskar plane? It doesn't really matter. So what? Because for me, I am all about Christ. Because to live is Christ, and to die, hey, the worst thing that could happen to me is they kill me. And guess what? That's even better. Because you know where I'm going? And if we really understood and believed that attitude in our lives, it would change everything in our world. Change of perspective can change everything. Any questions? All right. Then we'll be back next. You know, I can't help but think that this concept of spirituality and successful spiritual life is one of the ones that I think we just have to grapple with all the time, because the reality is that for someone to say to you, like me, just change your perspective. It's one of those concepts that is so simple, so complex to do in our lives. It's one of those things we have to constantly be reminded of. And while it is hard to do, at least the first step is recognizing the focus point in our life. What perspective are we seeing our life through? Through our personal desires, or through our place as one of God's children? Designed and loved and blessed and strengthened to bring God's glory. Anyway, it's something to think about. Hey, friend, I hope you'll join us next week. We're going to dive right back into the book of Philippians. And until then, be blessed.